Okay, good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to tell you why genetically modified vectors should not be used to control vector-borne disease. And my name is Rob Anderson. This is Beth Irwin, Dan Schmel, and Amanda Bachman. And hopefully you'll find our argument compelling. Okay, in our research, we found that genetically modified vectors should not be used to control vector-borne disease because there are problems on several different levels. Ecologically, in order to get this done in the first place, we would need to drive genes into the system, and that really has not been stably done yet. We also have no idea how genetically modified vectors would integrate into the wild population of vectors that's out there already, and how it would affect population and community dynamics. Epidemiologically, it's theoretically possible that we could have virulence shifts, not only according to the pathogen, but also host shifts. They could shift their preference on feeding on different hosts. And our current methods of vector control would be incompatible with genetically modified vectors. Ethically, it's also important to realize that it would be actually unethical to release these things and make sure that we got informed consent from everyone that the genetically modified vectors may affect. And we also want to make sure, obviously, if we're releasing a transgenic organism into the environment, that we can guarantee short and long-term safety. Now, in order to get this to work, we would have, as I said before, we would have to drive the genes into the system in order to overcome Mendelian patterns of inheritance and make sure that we had a stable population of vectors that were refractory to disease. It's been noted in the literature in several areas that a lot of genetic modification to these vectors incurs a fitness cost. It's been noticed in the pesticide literature as well as the transgenic vector literature. In order to overcome this, it's been estimated that we would have to have a 10-to-1 vector to wild or genetically modified vector to wild type population release in order for that to decrease the incidence and prevalence of disease. Think about how many vectors are out there in the case of mosquitoes. Think about how many mosquitoes are biting people in a single night in Africa. That's a huge number of GMVs that we would have to release. We also have to remember that the mechanism that we would use to change the vector in order to make it modified may not necessarily be stable. Transposons sometimes insert themselves in the genome in places we may not necessarily want them. And we also have to remember that it's going to be impossible to take back the genes that we insert into the population once they're put out there. Now, as far as population dynamics goes in the community level, it's really difficult to know how a GMV will integrate into the population because we really don't know everything there is to know about mosquito populations or any other vector populations out there right now. We don't know all the little intricacies that can happen, especially in a changing environment. We're also unable to accurately predict how these vectors will perform in the field versus the lab. There's definitely been differences seen in lab-reared mosquitoes and their fitness versus mosquitoes that were collected out of the field. We also have to remember, again, not only are we releasing genes in the population that we were not going to be able to take back, but the vectors that carry those genes we're not going to be able to take those back either. Now, epidemiologically, what we're trying to do is decrease the prevalence and incidence of disease. Now, it's been modeled that we would have to have 100% refractory genetically modified vector population in order to control or reduce the incidence of disease. These vectors can also lead to virulent shifts. A modified vector that's refractory to being infected by a pathogen is going to put a huge amount of pressure on that pathogen to change to be vectored again. It requires a vector in order to live. So there's definite theoretical possibility that that's going to happen, and it's actually been modeled in a couple of our references. We also need to remember that one disease can be vectored by multiple species, and that one vector can transmit multiple types of disease. So how are we going to limit the incidence of, say, malaria when there's at least 4 or 5 different species of mosquitoes in a malaria endemic area that can vector that disease? To exemplify this, there's been a host shift seen recently, a paper just came out in 2008, that one single nucleotide polymorphism, one change, one amino acid, allowed chikungunya virus to be vectored by Aedes albopictus when it was normally vectored by Aedes aegypti. We also have to remember that what we're doing now to control vector-borne disease is working, but if we try to put genetically modified vectors into that system, it's going to be completely incompatible. Our traditional methods of insecticide or insecticide-treated bed net, say, for malaria mosquitoes, is not going to differentiate between a genetically modified vector and a wild-type vector. So why would you kill your million-dollar mosquito? Okay, and also, host or virulent shifts may also compromise current medical treatment. It's important to remember that our immune system is extremely specific, and any change that may happen in the pathogen to be so that it's vectored by a GMV is going to affect the immune system of the host as well. Okay, ethically, we would need to get, in order to really release these things, we would need to get informed consent. Not only within the proposed release area, but also the surrounding areas. We have no idea where these vectors might go or where they might travel. And it's also important to remember that political and legal boundaries are important. Vectors are not going to respect country boundaries, so how are we going to get everybody to cooperate? And the last thing we want to guarantee is safety. We want to make sure that the infrastructure exists for containment and monitoring, and in a lot of places there's no infrastructure even for using traditional methods. We want to make sure that there is no risk of negative consequences, and it's possible that that could happen, and who's going to be culpable for that. And also, we want to make sure that we preserve ecosystem security. Pathogens may actually, and parasites may actually be necessary for a healthy ecosystem. Okay, and with that, we cannot really support the incorporation of genetically modified vectors into vector-borne disease control programs because releasing them would be unpredictable, uncontrollable, unsustainable, and potentially unsafe to humans in the environment. Thank you.
At this point, we will have a 3-minute time period for Purdue to clarify any questions they have for the Penn State team. This is not part of the rebuttal period. This is just for clarification. Are your mics working?
Not yet. There should be somebody here. Sorry, they're coming.
Okay.
Setting up for
Linnea. Okay. Can you guys hear each other?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. 3 minutes.
There definitely is. Obviously, you don't want to take buckets of DDT and pour them in a river to eliminate all the mosquito larvae there. However, this can be controlled where the release of genetically modified vectors cannot be. So there may be some sort of informed consent that can be used in that case where, you know, if there's DDT, obviously, you know, it stays in the environment for a long time. However, that's not the only pesticide being used. So, yeah, it's more than informed consent and the ability to take back what you put in, which is a lot more feasible with pesticides than something like a GMV, which we have no idea what dangers are involved in there. There's no field experiments involved in that.
So, Penn State, let me ask another question. So, it is possible to obtain informed consent for every person who might be affected by pesticides? Because you are asking that for GMVs.
Okay, I definitely agree with you on that. It's going to be impossible to get informed consent from everybody, but when you look at the different levels, and we want to err on the side of caution, it's much easier to stop applying a pesticide in an area than it is to remove every vector, which is a living organism and it's going to reproduce on its own, spread its genes around. Much easier to take a pesticide out of the environment by stopping its application than it would be to try to catch every mosquito you released out of millions.
Okay,
also about the epidemiological and ecological effects. Everything is still in theory and our hypothesis. Nothing has been proved yet in the lab or in the field. So, or you have any proof or any of those potential risks?
One of our references, Fuho et al., found that field performance of mosquitoes was extremely different than laboratory performance and behavior. And this was not done with a GM vector, but it was done with mosquitoes and that were collected from the field and also reared in the lab for several generations. And those mosquitoes were found at different fitness levels. And so that's the closest thing that we have as a reference for your question.
At this point, we're going to start kind of more continue the debate part. So Purdue, you have 2 minutes to ask questions for Penn State. They can record their questions and prepare their answers. So at this point, you're reinforcing your argument for your side of the topic. And you have 2 minutes to do that, and we'll follow by another 2 minutes for the con side, and then we'll go back and forth again.
Okay, so I will ask a question to the con team. Is the use of insecticides risk-free? Is the use of biologicals even risk-free? The answer is no, and probably GMEs are not the exception. We are aware that there are some risks associated with the use of GMEs, and we're not ignoring